This is episode 130.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendlin and his network of Road Trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Road Trekking RV Lifestyle Podcast. No matter what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a fifth wheel, a tent, maybe you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you, because here we talk about being outside, out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So, you are very welcome here, and we're honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, everybody's getting ready with their travel plans for 2017, and on everybody's bucket list, every RVer I know, is Yellowstone National Park. Some of us go year after year, sometimes a couple of times a year. It's that special of a place. But after record crowds and a series of pretty unfortunate incidents last year, this year, before you go, park officials are asking you to take the Yellowstone Pledge. What is it? Well, listen to our interview of the week coming up in a little bit as we learn about that pledge, why it's so important, and what else is new for 2017 at Yellowstone National Park. Plus, we have an important update to our recent report on ticks and Lyme disease that shows a just-released study that predicts an epidemic of tick infestations. Now, a lot of you RVers are going to be out in tick country, so you want to be sure and listen to that coming up in just a couple of minutes, particularly on the eastern seaboard. And we have, of course, regular RV questions that many of you sent in, some tips, and a great off-the-beaten-path report. But right now, my lifelong traveling companion, my bride, Jennifer. Hello, dear.
Hello, Michael.
We are back in our Sticks and Bricks, Michigan home.
And it feels good.
Yeah, it does. You know, we are on the road a little over half the time, pretty much. And it's always fun to come back here. It's fun to go to our other favorite places. We did have an interesting incident happen on the way back up on I-75. And I guess we should probably just kind of talk about that a little bit, because it's something that everybody on the road needs to be aware of. We've written on the blog before about the dangers of truck tire retreads and how easily when they blow, they leave that debris. They call them gators, because that's kind of what they look like, the back of them, the shredded parts of the tire left on the road, and how those tire remnants cause damage, oftentimes fatalities. They estimate over 25,000 accidents every year are caused by those things, and at least 100 deaths in the United States and Canada. Well, we've written about it. We've talked about it a lot on the Facebook group that we have, the Road Trekking Facebook group. But boy, it came home to us, hit home to us, I guess I could say literally, huh?
It did hit home. I was just sitting there minding my own business and wham.
Yeah, we were on I-75 north of Chattanooga, and I could see that stuff on the road, and I was just trying, I couldn't navigate. I was in the passing lane. I couldn't get off the onto the other side because there was traffic around us, and a vehicle in front of us ran over one of those things, and it slammed up, and it hit right at our passenger side door mirror in the motorhome.
Lucky the mirror was there.
Lucky it wasn't a few, even a foot or so over. It would have gone right through the windshield. It was that much power, because it literally knocked the mirror pretty much off. I had to pull off the road and fix it, but it makes you mad. Because these retreads do not last. There's a lot of proposals, and the trucking industry has fought back against anybody regulating retreads. But just take a look as you drive. They're all over the place, and they are very dangerous. So I don't know what lessons we can say, except when you see that stuff, get out of the way, try and get in another lane.
I think that's the frustrating part, because there's nothing you can do about it. These happen. You're grateful if it tire doesn't blow when you're right next to a truck. It's just one of those things. It's part of driving.
Yeah, and it was a mess. Well, anyway, that was our adventure on the way home. Other than that, a long drive. But we're back in Michigan for a while, and then we head south, I think, mid-April. We're here until then. So this is actually a long time for us to be.
Yeah, I feel guilty. You did 900 miles of the drive, and I think I only did about 100 coming home, so that wasn't fair.
Oh, I did. I like driving. I actually do. I enjoy the drive. It's kind of like a big movie going on outside your window. The other thing is we stopped and visited our son's place in Georgia before we left, so we had to hurry back, because I swear every time we come back and we have to be someplace, I see all these stops along the way I want to visit.
We should make a list.
I do. I have a list on both I-75 and I-65, which are the two routes we normally take, and it's fun. We had fun. On the way down, we stopped. We messed around the Corvette Museum. I'm not a big car guy, but that's always fascinating. Corvettes are gorgeous. That was the car of my youth.
And what we had going for us when we went down is the weather being cooler and we could leave Bo. Now we're going to have to deal with the issue of Bo as the weather gets warmer, because we don't want to leave him in the vehicle.
Bo, of course, if you're a new listener, is our Norwegian Elkhound, and we travel with him. He loves to travel. Many states, many municipalities are now making a no unattended dogs in a vehicle, even if it's an RV, even if the air conditioning is on. You're not allowed to do that. And they're encouraging police and others, if they see an unattended dog, to break the window to get in. And we don't want that. So it is a consideration that everybody has to take. But anyway, we've only been home a couple of days, and I took the road trek today out to take the dog to the dog park, and I actually wanted to go someplace, so.
Well, you can tomorrow take him back to the dog park. You can take him every day this week.
I think I will do that. He doesn't let me get any
I went with you one day.
Yeah, it's fun. It is fun.
It's a little community.
Yeah, actually, you've got a good tip this week about how we find dog parks on our travels, and you'll be sharing that coming up in our pet tips. But right now, it's your regular tip of the week. Are you ready?
I am.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
We've talked on this podcast before about how bad Lyme disease has become. As we reported in episode 128 a couple of weeks ago, Lyme disease is contracted by humans, primarily through ticks. Officially, the Center for Disease Control reported 30,000 cases are diagnosed every year. They actually suspect the real number is 10 times that. That means 300,000 people come down with this very serious illness every year in the U.S. alone. The reason we're revisiting this as a tip this week is because officials have come up with a way to estimate how bad tick infestation and Lyme disease will be in a given year. The prognosis for 2017 is grim. They are predicting an epidemic. NPR recently did a major story on this. We will link to it on the podcast. But essentially, scientists who have studied Lyme disease for more than 20 years have come up with an early warning system for the disease. They can predict how many cases there will be in a year in advance by looking at one key measurement: count the mice the year before. The explanation is simple. Mice are highly efficient transmitters of Lyme. They infect up to 95% of ticks that feed on them. Mice are responsible for infecting the majority of ticks carrying Lyme in the Northeast. And ticks love mice. An individual mouse might have 50, 60, or even 100 ticks covering its ears and face. The warm winter has led to an explosion of mice, killed off much fewer ticks than usual, and as a result, 2017 is predicted to be the worst year ever. The disease shows up in Maine, swoops down the East Coast into Washington, D.C., the Southern Virginias, and it hops to the Midwest into Northern Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota. There are also small pockets of Lyme on the West Coast. We will post a map with the show notes for this episode that shows the worst areas. So what can you do to keep from getting infected? The experts say you should do a tick check to your daily routine. When you're in the shower, check your body for tiny ticks, especially the places they like to hide. That's the scalp, behind the ears, the armpits, and in the groin area. If you do find a tick, get it off as quickly as possible. The longer an infected tick stays on your skin, the greater the chance it will pass the Lyme bacteria onto you. Generally, it takes about 24 hours for the tick to infect a person after it starts biting. Then be on the lookout for Lyme symptoms, like a red rash or a fever. If anything crops up, go see a doctor immediately. Don't wait. The earlier you get treated, the better chance you'll have for a full recovery. That's this week's tip. I invite you to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over and over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox. I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, radpowerbikes.com. They are an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes, now with free shipping. Now, Rad Power Bikes are showing up everywhere. If you have visited campgrounds over the last year, you probably have seen these great little e-bikes. Rad Power Bikes makes three different models. They fit a wide variety of rider wants and needs, and they all can reach a speed of 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. And you have the choice with these things. You can either pedal, just like on a regular bicycle, or you can use the throttle, the electric throttle, and you can have five different levels of pedal assist for this added boost that you want, or you can combine it however you want, pedaling and the electric boost. It's perfect for people who want to get back into riding. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. Now, Rad Power Bikes are priced often less than half that of comparable bikes on the market because that dealer retail markup is just cut completely out. If you mention Road Trekking at checkout in the coupon code, they will give you an extra $75 off, and you will get free shipping on all of their bike models. It's radpowerbikes.com.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, Mike. This is Deborah from Vermont. I don't have a road trek. I have a huge 40-foot fifth wheel, but I still love listening to your podcast. We've only been RVing for about 2 years, and my question is about the state and federal parks and forest. We've always stayed away from them, thinking there was no way we would fit. Is this really true? And how do I find out if I do fit before I make a reservation and go? Thanks so much.
Well, yes, it will fit. Now, not everywhere, but I did a quick little check, and I just looked, for example, at national park campgrounds. And I looked at a little chart there, and I'll put links to all these resources that I use that you can help find out where your rig will fit. But in just the national park campgrounds, your rig, which is 40 feet, will fit in 53% of all their campgrounds. Now, understand this, that many of the parks will only have a few sites that will handle that 40-foot size. So they may have 100 sites, but maybe only 10 of them or 8 of them will handle 40 feet. But they do have a number of national park campgrounds. 53% of all of them have spots that will hold a 40-foot rig like yours. You want to book in advance, and the simplest way to do it is to go to a website that we use. It's the one that all the federal national parks are on, and many of the national forests as well, recreation.gov. recreation.gov. I will put a link on the podcast show notes for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/130. But recreation.gov lists every national park and a whole bunch of federal U.S. forest campgrounds. And you just basically then pick out the one that you want and you can go through and you can see right there, you make a reservation and you can see real quickly which ones have spots for you. And many, many of them do. Having a large RV is not something that's going to disqualify you from parking. Many of the state forest campgrounds have spots that will certainly handle that. And of course, state parks all across the country regularly have a lot of spots that will handle something 40 feet in length. Now, we've done boondocking, and I'm thinking, Jennifer, I'm thinking about that trip we did in Arizona, the northern entrance to Grand Canyon. They have a great campground there, but when we visited it, it was filled. You couldn't get in because you got to reserve to get to those organized campgrounds a lot. But they have dispersed camping in the National U.S. Forest Service properties all around that, the Grand Canyon. And we found a number of spots. The one we camped on, you could have put a 40-foot rig in easily.
Easily. Could have pulled right through. No problem whatsoever.
Yeah, it was even like a pull-through. And we took that two nights in a row. And meanwhile, everybody's going back dozens of miles to find a commercial campground, and all they would have to do is just park right, you know, we were like 2 miles from the gate in this U.S. Forest Service land. So there are lots and lots of places, and I put links on the website for you. Probably the best thing for you to do if you really want to boondock and you want to really go out into the U.S. Forest lands is find the district headquarters. And it's always best to visit in person, but if you're going and you know that you're in some area, look it up. Look up the U.S. Forest Service site, and look for their national forests in the area you're going, or the U.S. Forest there. Find the district headquarters, and if you can get there in person, it's great because the rangers will just say, "Hell yeah, you can get in here. Here's the spot. Here's a map." They'll mark you how to get there. They'll give you the latest information on the roads. That's probably the biggest limiting factor that you might find in some of those sites is they're dirt roads. They're often bumpy roads, and it's a little hard for you to haul that big 40-foot fifth wheel with your truck. But you will find spot. They'll say, "Well, yeah, I can't get in there, but go over here," and they'll give you a lot. So there are lots and lots of places that you can find, and many boondocking spots can easily handle big rigs. So check it out. Don't get yourself stuck in those huge commercial campgrounds because you think that's the only place you can go. You can get that thing in many, many places. And we really do love that. The Bureau of Land Management out west, U.S. Forest Campgrounds, National Forest Campgrounds, there's lots of room for those big things. We see them every place.
We have. And so you don't have to have a small rig. Big rigs can fit in as well. Just got to look.
Just got to look. And I'll put some links to get you started, recreation.gov. There's a site called rvcamping.org that has a great list of U.S. Forest Service campgrounds. I'll link to that as well. And you'll find plenty of spots. Sponsoring this part of the podcast, Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, Nevada, bringing you a large inventory of Class B RVs from three locations. If you are in the market for a Class B RV, you know they are in high demand, and that is why you will want to check in with these three great dealers, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, WagonTrailRV.com. They specialize in Class Bs from all of the major manufacturers. They have new and used models in stock on their lots right now. Go to those three websites, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, WagonTrailRV.com. They all have a fly and drive program where you can make your purchase even online. They'll pay your airline cost to get there and then take you right to the dealership. So check them out. Here's Dan, the van man, with what's happening this time.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, due to some shipping errors, we have some overstock on our Renegade Villaggios and Viennas. They got some new redesigns on them, so you can check those out at VanCityRV.com or stop in and see them today and get a great deal. We also are having our spring show on the lot here at the dealership, and that'll be March 30th through April 1st. We have some of our factory reps here to display the units. So come by and check them out. Again, that's March 30th to April 1st, our spring show at the dealership. Give us a call today at 1-800-467-3905.
They say every dog has its day. In this part of the podcast, it's time. time for tips, resources, and travel advice about bringing pets on our RV adventures.
People ask us how we find places to take Bo for exercise while we're traveling. We love off-leash parks where he can run and play with other dogs. We also are big believers in doggy daycare. To find them, we have a couple of apps that we use. For doggy daycare, places that you drop off your dog for supervised play with other dogs during daytime hours and for occasional overnight stays in the homes of trusted pet sitters, we use the Doggy Vacare app and website. It automatically finds your location and returns a list of boarding and daycare facilities in areas that you will be visiting. You can read all about them and contact them right from the app. When it comes to finding off-leash parks and other pet-friendly places like restaurants, hotels, and even doggy beaches where Bo can swim, we use the website Go Pet Friendly. As we plan our route for the day, we open up the site and find places where we can stop along the way and get Bo some exercise, or places we may want to visit where we can bring him. Some time back, Mike interviewed the owners of Go Pet Friendly. You can listen to it at roadtrekking.com/85. We'll put links to both of these websites and Mike's past interview with the people at Go Pet Friendly on the show notes for this episode at roadtrekking.com/130. Hope this helps.
This part of the podcast brought to you by our friends at Dozers Dental Chews, an all-natural, healthy treat your dog will love. Available direct through Amazon and now available in over 600 home goods stores around the country. If you visit a home goods store, go check out Dozers Dental Chews. 100% all-natural ingredients, and they are gluten-free. They're made in the USA. They're low in fat. There's no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives. They give you clean teeth. They reduce your plaque on your dog's teeth as the dog chews dozers. They freshen their breath. But the most important thing is your pet is going to love them. Now, you can't see this. I wish I had a camera, but as soon as I mentioned dozers, Bo, who is in the other room, came in here looking at me because he knows that word.
He knows that word.
It's his favorite treat. It is his absolute favorite. If I had a video camera, I should turn it on and then I would say the word again. You'd watch him come. He just loves it. Now, some people actually take dozers and they have these little hollow pockets that they can stuff peanut butter or little favorite treats and stuff in them and make it even better. But we don't. Bo just likes the taste of it as it is. And the people at Dozers have given us a supply when we're traveling around. If you happen to run into us on the road and you have a pet, ask for a Dozers. Bo loves to give them to his doggy buddies. And every dog that we've given them to absolutely loves them. So you need to check them out. Dozers Dental Chews. Again, what we really like about them is they're made in the USA. If you follow dog recalls, dog pet recalls, some of the scandals that have broken, it involves food and treats made overseas in China and other places where the standards are not up to snuff. And that's why we like dozers. These are just really nice treats. Every dog loves them. Dozers, they're available at Amazon. You can make a direct link if you go to roadtrekking.com/dozers, D-O-Z-E-R-S. Or as I said, they're now available in home goods stores all across the country. Okay, it's time to plan the 2017 trip. And are you planning a trip to Yellowstone? We are going to talk about Yellowstone, what's happening out there right now. Right now, they're getting ready to clear off the snow. I just was looking at the webcams. Lots of snow at Yellowstone. But there were some unfortunate incidents this past season. Some people call them tourist morons, who try and take selfies with the animals there. Or they walk off the boardwalk into these fragile thermal areas. Somebody actually fell in one of them and was instantly boiled to the point that he was completely dissolved. I know that's kind of gross, but that's how dangerous this water is. And so there's a lot of things happening at Yellowstone as we get ready for the season. The animals are all ready, and it's going to park is about ready to open in another month or so. But as you get ready to plan, we want you to be aware of something new that's coming up. It's called you'll learn all about it in this interview that we're going to come, but it's called the Yellowstone Pledge. That is among other topics that our guest and I talk about as we get ready to travel to Yellowstone National Park. Listen up. Well, joining us right now from Yellowstone National Park is Morgan Worthen. She is a public affairs specialist. And Morgan, thank you for spending some time with us and getting us all excited about a brand new year at everybody's favorite national park.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you.
So here we are in early March. People are planning their RV trips. And of course, Yellowstone is on everybody's bucket list. I know we make it twice a year at least, and I can't wait to get back there. I usually come in about the middle of June. Tell us what it's like now and what's going on and what will be new for 2017.
Okay, so happy to do so. So I can tell you right now, as I look out my window, it is chilly out there. I'm based in Mammoth Hot Springs, so in the very northern section of the park. And I believe it was about 25 degrees, and the wind is blowing. So the wind chill factor makes it chilly for sure, coupled with the cold temperatures. We still have quite a bit of snow, and but it clearly, given the increase in daylight, we know that spring is coming. And certainly the days are warming than they would have been in January.
We should point out, I think first, that Mammoth Hot Springs is always open all year round, and your campground there is open as well, right?
That's correct. Yep. Yes.
So you can visit and camp in Yellowstone in the winter, but beyond that, right now, what roads are open?
So that's it for now, as far as roads that are open to wheeled vehicles. Right now, spring plowing has started in the park. So as far as road closures for over-snow vehicles, the Mammoth to Norris Road, that closed, actually. It always closes on the, or rather it closed Sunday at 9 p.m. And then what we'll begin to see is the road from Norris to Madison, and Madison then, or rather Norris to Canyon, that road will close on March 7th at 9 p.m., and then Canyon to Fishing Bridge and Fishing Bridge to the east entrance, that road will close on March 12th. So basically what you're starting to see is road closures to over-snow vehicle so that spring plowing can begin so the park prepares for summer.
How deep is the snow out there? I've seen photos and videos before, and it is quite the job to clear those roads. Those roads are snow-covered when we say that, and we're not exaggerating.
That's a great question, and it varies. It varies across the park. So, for instance, in Mammoth Hot Springs, we're at a lower elevation than, say, Old Faithful or even the south entrance. So typically what that means is we'll get less snow here in Mammoth. How thick the snow is completely varies across the park. And it's also determined by what are the winds and how much loading has there been of snow in particular areas that are more receptive to wind.
Okay, so right now, pretty much, the park has been open during the winter to over snow vehicles, like snow machines and those tracked vehicles. They're closing those roads now. When do we expect the park to be open, largely open for regular vehicles, RVs and cars and that sort of stuff? What's the timetable for that?
So weather permitting, typically park roads will begin to open April 21st, and that will be from the West Yellowstone road, and then also depending on conditions of the roads, then more roads will open thereafter. So So it's safe to say, I think, for RVers that the park should be open by early May. But of course, that's always weather permitting. So we always encourage people to either go online and to check our website, where we have the most up-to-date information with regards to road closures and road openings.
I should also point out that the website for Yellowstone National Park, and I'll put a link to it in our show notes here, but the website has webcams, live webcams, in which you can look at many of the more popular spots at Yellowstone, including Old Faithful, and you can see the, I was looking at the snow-covered west entrance there a little while ago before I got you on the line. So back in mid to late April, we should be able to get in our vehicles. Now, tell us what's new at Yellowstone for 2017. How are the animals done, I guess, and what's new for 2017 that people should know about?
So I think the most important thing I'd like to share with people is, as far as what's new, is we have what's called the Yellowstone Pledge. And that is new. And the pledge has stemmed from just the significant increase in visitation that we've seen in the park the last couple of years. And given the increase in visitation, we've also seen some behaviors from our visitors. Like, for instance, people who are just getting too close to elk or way too close to bison, or not staying on the boardwalks, for instance, near the thermal features. So what we did was we really wanted to reach out to all of our visitors and to have them understand that their positive behaviors, positive actions in the park contribute to preserving this exceptional place that they're coming to see. And the animals that they're coming to see as well.
Yeah, I just looked up the Yellowstone Pledge on the website, and I will also put a link to that. But boy, those are just common sense. Maybe you could share some of them, particularly the problem with, you know, with cell phones. Everybody's taking selfies now, and like you pointed out, we have seen some of the dangers that creates. And let's talk about that Yellowstone Pledge. What are some of the things that we need to pledge before we really go in and enjoy this beautiful resource?
So here's a couple that we can talk about. One is to practice safe selfies.
selfies. I like it.
Yeah. By never approaching animals to take a picture. You know, we know that people are so incredibly excited to be in the park and perhaps to see the first bison that they've ever seen in their life. But what we have found is many people want to get closer and closer to the animals to get a photo of themselves with that animal. But there's consequences there. And so what we ask in the pledge is that we ask people to practice safe selfies, to stay a distance, to stay 25 yards away from bison, 25 yards from elk. By all means, to take photos, you know, so that they can effectively preserve their vacation, but to stay clear of the wildlife. And in so doing, they protect themselves, but they also protect the wildlife.
Mm. That's good. Now, there were a lot of incidents that got a lot of attention this year about people straying into thermal areas, which are very fragile and very hot. Maybe you could talk about that danger and then how we need to behave when we're in those magnificent but potentially dangerous areas if we go off trail.
You bet. So another pledge that's part of the Yellowstone Pledge is to stay on boardwalks in thermal areas. So people who are coming to Yellowstone, of course they're coming to witness these exceptional features, these thermal features, hot springs, Old Faithful, geysers. And we have geyser basins throughout Yellowstone where we invite visitors to come and to experience these exceptional features. What we ask, though, of visitors is that they stay on the boardwalk. It's for their own safety, and it's for the preservation of the park. And we ask them that because these thermal features, they're deceptive. They're beautiful. They oftentimes, you know, they're clear water, but they're rimmed with exceptionally beautiful colors. They're deceiving, though, because the waters are at boiling or boiling point or even hotter. So if someone was to put their finger in that water, they would immediately burn their finger and or worse. And then also because these features are so fragile, by putting their finger in these features and or throwing items in them, they alter these features. And the park is here to preserve them so that the millions of Americans who want to see them and learn about them can see them intact.
Mm.
So again, for our visitors, for their own safety, but again, for the preservation of this exceptional place, we ask people to please stay on the boardwalks.
Morgan, when you're in a car, when we're in a car or an RV and you're driving through the park, what kind of extra attention do we need to make, and how would that fit in with some of the stuff that you're asking people to use as part of the Yellowstone Pledge?
Oh, thanks for asking. So there's a couple other pledges, of which include follow the speed limits and pull over to let cars pass. You know, the roads in Yellowstone are very different than what we as Americans and are used to driving on highways. The roads they're not as wide. They're typically just two lanes, and speed limits are slow. And so we ask people to absolutely follow the speed limits, but to pull over to let other cars pass, if they are going slow, and if even more importantly, if perhaps they're driving on the road, and for instance they'll see an elk on the side of the road. A lot of times, what will happen is that people, again, they're so excited that they'll stop right in the middle of the road, and sometimes they'll even get out of their vehicle to approach the wildlife to get that mm-hmm. selfie. And so what we ask people to do is for them to be very aware of their actions and to drive as if they are driving in their hometown, which is you would never stop in the middle of the road when you're driving in your own hometown, and we ask that you don't do that in Yellowstone as well.
Now, sometimes you get stuck in those critter jams, those wildlife jams, where, you know, there's a grizzly up in the meadow and everybody stops. How should visitors respond then? And that's one of the great things, that you're going to see this stuff, but sometimes you find yourself stuck in a pretty good critter jam. What do you do?
Yeah, and those jams can get upwards of a mile, if not longer. Though oftentimes the jams become so long because people get out of their vehicles. So what we ask in the pledge is that you pledge to stay in your vehicle during a wildlife jam. Absolutely stay in your vehicle. Take photos from your vehicle, but please do not get out of your vehicle, because what that means is that then creates a jam for others behind you who also would like to see that particular black bear or bison, but cannot do that because of the significant jam. And ultimately what we've found is that these large jams can lead to tension with our visitors, especially because many people don't know why the jam is happening.
Mm. I'll put a link in your vehicle. Yep, stay in your vehicle. I will put a link to this Yellowstone Pledge. There's a number of other things on it in our show notes. So, and we're going to ask all of our listeners to take that pledge. You can even share it on social media with a little hashtag Yellowstone Pledge. Let's talk about the crowds this year. Yes, last year, of course, it was a centennial year, and all the national parks had a lot of people. How is Yellowstone? Seems every time I go, I notice more people. How has the attendance been over the past couple of years, and what do you expect for 2017?
So, great question. So, in 2015, we had 4 million visitors who came to the park.
Wow!
In 2016, given our centennial year, we had 4.2 million visitors that came to the park.
Wow! Again,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will tell you, 2015, That was a significant year for employees in Yellowstone because we didn't anticipate that many visitors. 2016, we did anticipate a lot of visitors, and that came to about 4.2. So honestly, in 2017 and onward into the near future, we anticipate and we will plan for a continued increase in visitation.
So that's probably even more. The marvelous part about Yellowstone is it's so big and there is so much room. You will encounter traffic when there's critters, but there's so much room to spread out. One last question, Morgan, as we kind of wind down. Anything on tap on your schedule for 2017 that RVers may want to know about? Maybe something in campgrounds, new sites, anything going on that the RV crowd, which is a big part of your visitors, would want to consider as they get going?
You know, great question. I would say there was so much newness in 2016 that in 2017 we're hopeful to welcome our visitors and to build upon the great support and enthusiasm that we got in 2016. What I would share with RVers in particular is given the celebration year of 2016, we think that there will continue to be those who want to celebrate into 2017, the national parks and Yellowstone in particular. So I would ask that RVers, they pack their patience when they come into Yellowstone, that they anticipate during the busy months of June, July, and August, that given the winding roads and the traffic, because it's a big place, they should anticipate seeing quite a bit of people and to pack their patience. But I also have a recommendation for them. It's that the early birds avoid crowds and traffic.
Yep.
So we would encourage them to visit the park during non-peak hours. And for Yellowstone, those are before 9 a.m. and after 3 p.m. And also, here's something else for them to consider. It's the seasons, to consider visiting during a non-peak season, which are April and May and September and October.
It's absolutely, and the beauty of both of those times is you'll see more wildlife. Wildlife is more active early in the morning and also off season, they're more active. Well, Morgan, I will look you up. I'll be there. I'm coming in June for the first time, and then we'll be there, I think, in September as well, September, October. But my favorite park ever since I've discovered it, and I'm not alone. And I just thank you for spending a little bit of time and getting us all excited about visiting Yellowstone National Park in 2017. Morgan, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you very much.
We'll put links to the Yellowstone Pledge on our show notes for this episode. Also, I will put a link to the camping reservation site for Yellowstone. There are a number of campgrounds. I think there's 7 or 9 campgrounds, something like that. But 5 of them accept reservations, and they can handle everything from, you know, tents to great big rigs. They are the Bridge Bay Campground, the Canyon Campground, the Fishing Bridge RV Park, which is a huge one, the Grant Campground, and the Madison Campground. They all accept reservations. I'll put a link to those sites for them. And you need to make those reservations like right away if you want to get in. The secret that Morgan talked about, though, is the early bird. You know, not only are you going to see more wildlife and stuff, but there are several campsites that are walk-in or day sites where you have to come in that day to you can't reserve. And if you're going to get a spot at these are great campsites. You want to get there before 8:30 in the morning. So I've noticed that a couple of weeks ago, there would be people out in front at sunup at 6 o'clock waiting, because when there's a vacancy that day, then the park volunteer, the park ranger who's in charge of that little campground, will then post it, and those people can get their site. So just a little secret, if you want to get the good sites, which are really not the big one, the 5 that I mentioned are big parks with hookups, and the ones I like are the boondocking spots, and they're just great. So you can do a whole search on Yellowstone. I'll put links to all their different resources they have and on the wildlife that's there, traffic and road updates. There's always construction going on. And then those Yellowstone webcams, I will put those also. So just go to the show notes for this episode, scroll down to wherever they have the interview of the week, and you'll find those links. That's at roadtrekking.com/130. Our interview of the week brought to you by SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new or used Road Trek motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the country. We have gotten to know the folks at Sunshine State RVs in Gainesville, Florida well now. We've met them, been there, hung out, did a couple of Facebook Live reports, I think, from there. I even set my drone up and took some pictures of them. Why Sunshine State RVs? Well, first of all, these guys probably have the largest used inventory of Road Trek motorhomes that you'll find anywhere in North America. They have a whole bunch of them. You'll find them all listed on their website at sunshinestatervs.com. But they also sell brand new Road Treks. They're one of the most recent dealers for new Road Treks. They carry all the whole new Road Trek line. They carry those. They also carry in used lines. They carry Pleasureways, Winnebagos, Leisure Travel, and of course Road Treks. You just are not going to find a wider selection anywhere else. All the used RVs go through a very thorough 172-point inspection. They test them on the road. They test them inside the shop. They get that thing looking and feeling and running well with everything functioning the way it should be. They'll fly you down. You make your deal, they'll fly you down. You can buy it and then drive it home, or they'll deliver it to your driveway, whatever you want. Here's our pal Nick from Sunshine State RVs. Hey, Nick, what's happening?
Thanks, Mike. I'm so glad to hear that you finally found spring.
I did.
I know you were on a two-month mission to find it. This month right here is the reason that people live in Florida. It is absolutely beautiful out. I want to say congrats to Larry and Bev, who flew down from Milwaukee last week and bought a 2009 Road Trek 210 from us. They're longtime listeners of the podcast, and they absolutely love the road trekking lifestyle. We've gotten in some great used road treks this week. We just got in a one-owner 2008 Road Trek Adventurous with a huge solar panel on it, big inverter, batteries, all the technology. We also got in a 2013 CS Adventurous with a large fridge, really, really nice RV. These RVs will be on our website this week to check out. We really try to make the buying process as easy as possible for you. We'll fly you here or deliver the RV right to your front door, all at no cost to you. Visit our website at sunshinestatervs.com to read more about our buying process and check out all of our new and used road treks. Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
All right. Nick was talking about us finding spring because, you know, every year I go off in search of spring. I leave Michigan where it's cold and snowy, and we drive south until we see the first evidence of spring, which is usually flowers blooming. And when we went down right after Valentine's Day, I think we left on Valentine's Day, the spring was right around Huntsville, Alabama, right in that area, generally in the Kentucky, Tennessee, the Tennessee, Alabama border. When we were coming back north, it had moved up and it was in just north of Louisville. So spring is making its way to the North Country. Those of you who, is this being released? This is being released on March 8th. I would think that in Michigan, where we happen to be right now, you won't see those flowers blooming probably until April or so. But spring, we found it. It's just down south a little bit.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle. Here's the road trekking news of the week.
All right, three stories for you this week. First of all, a thank you to RV Daily News publisher Greg Gerber, who wrote a very flattering story on his website about the road trekking Facebook group that we have. And also thanks to Erwin Heimer Group of North America and Road Trek CEO Jim Hamill, who also chimed in on there and said some really nice things about the group. Basically, it was a story that Greg wrote about how effective Social media can be if you have an engaged CEO from a company, an RV company. And he talked about how our group, our Road Trekking Facebook group, has become a very positive and a very fun place for people to share their RV lifestyle adventures, to get support and share ideas. And Jim Hamill then jumped in and he wrote this. He said, the people in the road trekking community are amazing. Mike Wendland has built a site with 1.5 million visits per quarter, 400,000 Facebook likes on his main Facebook page. It's unreal. His commitment to lifestyle, to the lifestyle and support for each other is amazing. His volunteers who moderate for him are superb at keeping the conversation productive and global. We're pleased to sponsor him, and I can consider the vast majority of these folks to be my friends. Our lifestyle is a fantastic way to live. It is. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Greg Gerber, for the kind words. And we'll put a link up to that story and Jim's comments and others from RV Daily News. It'll be on our show notes. Also, in the news this week, if you need a job, the RV industry is desperate for workers. In Elkhart, Indiana, Elkhart, as you probably know, is the center of the RV industry in North America, and do they need workers? In Elkhart County, Indiana, there are going to be 5,000 new jobs created over just the next couple of months. And already their labor force has a shortage of about 10,000. So you know they need folks. The vast majority of those jobs are in the RV industry. The city says RV firms and suppliers are expanding. New companies are relocating there, and there's just not enough housing to go around. They're trying to build some more really high-end housing in the area for these new workers. The town's Economic Development Commission is scrambling. But if you're looking for a place where the economy is booming and you need a job, look no further than Elkhart, Indiana. Again, we'll link to that in the show notes. And one more story from Nebraska. The Sand Hill Cranes are on the move, and their annual spring Sand Hill Crane migration is underway right now, particularly around the Platte River waters. Look at the Crane Trust and Roe Sanctuary. That's a group that is providing a closer look and guided tours. They've set up blinds along the Platte River that give you excellent views. It's amazing. There are thousands and thousands of sandhill cranes that are on their move now around the Platte River. You can find sunrise and sunset tours to these blinds. They're all available. And they can get you from 10 to 100 feet of upwards of 80,000 cranes in one roost. That's how many they are. Can you imagine that? 80,000 of them. That's a bunch. Links to that story as well if you want to visit the Platte River Valley in Nebraska on the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com/130. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Alda, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV. That's Alda, A-L-D-E. It is a hydronic system which brings many features and benefits that you cannot find in any other RV heating product. The Alda system is a silent, radiant heat. It provides a warm, even, natural heated interior. It is great for pets. It's great for humans as well. They will love it. Your pets will love it. It feels good. It's not dry like that forced air that comes out of most RV heating systems. It's very efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC, and that means it's going to extend the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. Lots of extra options and amenities you can have on your Alda system. The one that Jennifer and I have, we have heated floors in our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL. We love that, and those cool warnings as we've been in the RV over the last couple of weeks. It's just so nice to have that warmth in the floor. It's awesome. It's now available. The Alda system is available on Road Treks. It's also available on Winnebago's and many other RV manufacturers. When you're doing your shopping, ask and say, hey, does it have an Alda heater? Because that's what you want. ALDE, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
Time to spring clean your tech. To help us with that is our pal from Verizon Wireless, Steve Van Dinter.
Hi there, Mike. Well, just like our closets get overrun with clothes and other things over the course of the year, our phones too can become slower and low on space. But unlike when you clean out the closet at your house, spring cleaning your electronics won't cause you to break a sweat and is more satisfying than you may think. So a few questions you may want to ask yourself. First, are you using all the apps on your phone? To be sure, just open the app tray and take a look. I mean, a real look. If you're not using them, go ahead and delete. Well, second, is your system up to date? Most phones will update their software automatically, but just to be sure, you want to go to Settings and System Update and make sure you have the latest. Well, next, are your photos and videos taking up lots of phone space? No need to delete them. Instead, take advantage of the cloud. Google Photos will back up unlimited amounts of your photos and videos. Once the backup happens, just hit free up space and the copies will be deleted from your phone, but stay in the cloud for you to access anytime and anywhere. And remember downloading that PDF of your gym schedule, or maybe it was that local restaurant menu. Well, PDFs and other downloads are easily forgotten and take up space in your download folder. Simply open up your apps menu, select downloads, and then go ahead and delete. And finally, when it's out with the old and in with the new, you can put your old phone to work helping others in the community. Consider donating it to Hopeline from Verizon, a national program that recycles old phones for cash grants to local nonprofits. Hopeline dedicates its resources to agencies that help survivors of domestic violence. Well, with this week's traveling technology tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
Happy spring, Steve. This part of the podcast brought to you by Verizon, which operates America's most reliable wireless network. And when Verizon says they're better, they mean it. They have ranked the highest in three leading wireless network studies in multiple tests year after year for network quality performance, network performance satisfaction, overall network performance. In the nation's largest studies, Verizon ranked number one, not just year after year, but period after period. Can your network say that? If you're stuck on the wrong network, head over to Verizon and get yourselves unstuck.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
Our regular Off the Beaten Path correspondents, Tom and Patty Burkett, have a knack of finding really fun and interesting and oftentimes historic places that are off the beaten path. So it is this week with a place that they found in Nebraska. Here's Tom Burkett.
If you're familiar with historical Native American figures beyond Crazy Horse and Osceola, you've likely heard of Black Elk. He was born to the Oglala Sioux on Wyoming's Powder River in 1863. As a young man, already a distinguished warrior, he fought in the Battle of Greasy Grass, we call it Little Bighorn, in which Custer's forces were defeated. After that battle, pressure from the army increased and many of the Oglala Sioux fled to Canada rather than be forced onto reservations. Black Elk was one of those. After several years in Canada, he returned to the reservation and settled near Wounded Knee Creek, where he became widely known as a skilled healer. In 1886, he joined Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show and toured North America and Europe for 3 years before coming back to the Dakota Territory to help lead the Ghost Dance movement. The Ghost Dancers believed that traditional rituals could end the European dominance of the West and bring back the bison. The Ghost Dance movement became more and more threatening to the army, and in 1890, the Wounded Knee Massacre ended the hopes of the Sioux. Black Elk continued to live on the reservation where he maintained his practice of traditional healing and his position as a respected elder. In 1930, he met John Neihardt of Dana College, who recorded his biography and memoirs. Black Elk Speaks became the best-selling book ever written by a Native American. In the final chapter of the book, Black Elk reflects on the moment Chief Red Cloud convinced him and others to surrender in the wake of the Wounded Knee Massacre. I didn't know then how much was ended. I can see that something else died there in the bloody mud and was buried in the blizzard. A people's dream died there. It was a beautiful dream. Black Elk's complex vision of the transformation and healing of the world is memorialized at the Tower of the Four Winds in Blair, Nebraska. The tower is covered with intricate mosaics, and more are inlaid in the walkways that crisscross the park. Just down the road, Dana College, where John Neihardt was a professor, sits shuttered amid the growing weeds, a victim of declining enrollment and rural location. It's striking and unusual to see an abandoned college campus. The Sioux are gone, Neihardt and Black Elk are gone. Dana College is gone. But the vision remains of a transformed Earth. Blair is on the Lincoln Highway, just a bit north of Omaha, and it's worth a visit. When you're in Blair, stop by a sports bar called Runza and get yourself a Runza. This local chain began in Lincoln in 1949. What's a Runza? Well, it's a lot like a beer rock, if you've ever had one of those. Here, they're hot, tasty, and Nebraska perfect. We're Patty and Tom Burkett, and if it's not eating hubcaps and Runzas among the Cornhuskers, we'll hope to see you somewhere else out there off the beaten path.
Okay, I have no idea what a Runza, I have no idea what a beer rock is, but if you like it, Tom, I'm going to try it next time I'm going through Nebraska. Hey, we'll put a link to the Tower of the Four Winds Tom talked about, and also a link to Black Elk Speaks, the book that he mentioned. All this on our Road Trekking show notes, which can be found at roadtrekking.com/130.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, I want to give a big tip of the hat to our friends with the Family Motor Coach Association. They are gathered as we speak here, March 7th through the 10th, this episode being released on March 8th. They are out at the Rawhide Western Town and Event Center in Chandler, Arizona. It's their rally in the valley. Twice a year, the FMCA gets together with all of its members for a big, gigantic motorhome rally, and there are hundreds and hundreds of big rigs out there right now. They've got entertainment and showcases of RVs to look at and lots of vendors and lots of socializing. So hello to everybody at the Rally in the Valley going on out in Chandler, Arizona with the FMCA. Now, the RV show season, and you've been listening regularly, you've heard us, we run down the shows every weekend. They're winding down because why? Well, RV travel season starts pretty darn soon. And so really after March, there's not a lot of shows until the fall. There are two on tap this weekend that we know about, and we will direct you to those now. The first is in Hampton Roads, Virginia, at the Hampton Roads Convention Center. It's the Virginia RV show, and that is running, of course, from March 10th through the 12th at the Hampton Roads Convention Center in Hampton Roads, Virginia. And then our final one is in Loves Park, Illinois, the Rockford RV Camping and Travel Show, March 10th through 12th. That is at the huge indoor sports center in Loves Park, Illinois.
America in a Class B motor home. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking.
Indeed we will. Hey, we are delighted that you spent some time with us this time. And again, listen to the show notes. You can get the links to everything we talked about and resources that we mentioned. They're all available and built into the show notes that kind of chronicle this episode. roadtrekking.com/130. So ends another episode of Road Trekking, the RV Lifestyle Podcast. Remember, if you would like to have your voice heard and be a part of the podcast with Jennifer and me, you can record a voicemail message by clicking the right-hand Leave Voicemail button on the roadtrekking.com website. I also invite you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever your podcast player happens to be. New episodes released every Wednesday morning, and we invite you to also join our Road Trekking mailing list. It's absolutely free. We send out a special newsletter to subscribers every Monday morning. You can sign up right from the blog. Till next time, I'm Mike Wendland, Road Trekking across North America. See you later.